Welcome to Ben Behaving Dadly with me, Ben Hanlon. This is the podcast where I sit down each week with a celebrity guest and get their best parenting tips and advice, from the small little parenting hacks right up to the big stuff.
Today's guest is Kate Thornton. So I've done my research. Kate started life out as the youngest ever and first female editor of pop magazine Smash Hit at the age of 21. First female editor, that's bonkers, right? She produced her first issue in 1996, which was the breakup of Take That. What an issue to start with. And most of us know her more of a TV presenter. So she was obviously the first presenter of X Factor. She worked on the first three series. So she crowned, see if you can remember this, Steve Brookstein, Shane Ward, and who was the third winner? Leona Lewis. She since then went on to do so many other things on TV. I could list her TV credits on and on and on, including being a regular anchor on Loose Women. But we're in the podcasting world, so she is no stranger to a podcast. Kate currently hosts the extremely brilliant, and you have to give this a listen, the White Wine Question Time. I've been a guest. Basically, you just get very, very boozy and answer some quite profound questions and don't make much sense. But go and check that out. But today, we are not here to talk about any of that. Oh, no. Because Kate is a mother to a 12-year-old son, Ben, not Benjamin. Apparently, Kate chose that name because it's a good fun name that can't be messed with, is what I'm told. Kate, welcome to the podcast. Hello.
Thank you. I love the name Ben. It's not that it's a fun name. It's a good, solid name.
Good, solid name.
And every Ben I know is brilliant. Mainly Ben Shepherd.
Okay. Yeah. Did he have any part to play?
He did. Massively. Yeah. So Ben did Extra Factor and I did X Factor, which is when we got to know each other. And I love him. And I'd like my son to grow up to be just like him, because he's a good man and he's a funny man and he's a hardworking man and he has all the qualities that I admire in human beings.
And have you ever, obviously you've not called him Benjamin, have you ever been times where you wish you had a longer name when you could yell at him and go, Benjamin? Or are you happy with Ben? Solid.
No, I don't really yell at him, actually. He's quite chilled, my son. Sorry. I mean, obviously, when he was younger, but not so much now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it, right? So we're currently recording this during lockdown 427. Oh. My first question, being given the topic of your podcast, how much more are you drinking now and parenting at home, Kate? Is it a lot? Because we are.
Not actually. It's probably less. Because I like to drink socially. There's no social life.
Yeah.
I'm not a massive drinker. Even when I drink, it's pretty moderate. So I'm not a big boozer. And I think I decided at the beginning of lockdown one, there was a sort of 2 week period where it was like, oh, wow, this is like, what is this? And we were all in that kind of stunned state. And I did, we were Zooming people and having a few glasses of wine. And I just thought, this could go on for a long time. No one thought a year, by the way. Yeah. I can either turn left and hit the off license, or I can turn right and get really fit in lockdown. And I turned right. So I've actually...
Did you? What have you done?
I've been doing every day, Monday to Friday, not every day, Monday to Friday. I do an online Instagram class with all my mates, which is led by a brilliant guy, a friend of ours in Liverpool called Richie Swan. It's called Sort Your Fit Out. And so every morning at 10 o'clock, we all log on. And if we can't log on, we just catch up on IGTV. So at the moment, I'm 7 weeks in on an 8-week challenge with him. And doing that challenge, there's some people that you might know, Tamsin Athwaite, Emma Bunton, Meg Matthews, Chelsea Grimes, Alexandra Burke, loads of us. There's about 150 of us that log on every day. And then we have this kind of splinter WhatsApp group called Rich's Bitches. So it's really nice for me, because as well as all of those guys that you know, there's lots of my friends on there that you possibly wouldn't. And it's just a chance for us to come together every day and be fit and have something to talk about that isn't lockdown.
So do you find, because obviously this is what people are trying to figure out, is how do they cope with the fitnessy stuff? Do you find it being live the key, as opposed to going back and watching some sort of like old episode on YouTube type thing?
Yes, it does. It's a massive, massive motivator. But equally, there are days when, I'm back at work now, so I'm filming in studio some days. I can't always do the 10 o'clock live. Sometimes I do have to do the catch-up. You never quite work as hard on a catch-up as you do in a live, if I'm being really honest. No one does. Week, I did a disgraceful thing. I worked out so late and I thought, I'm not going to drop a class this week. I've got to finish. But I'd already had a glass of wine. So I carried on working out with the wine. It worked. It was fine.
You don't feel the pain. Don't feel the pain.
Not so much, babe.
Well, so go on. So we've tried. I think what's happened is, like, you're right, it's so long. People have started to put in these little rules and things. Like you said, you do this every day. So, like, drinking wise, have you got rules of, like, don't have a drink in the week or any of it the week? Like, have you got any? Well, no, you just, no,
I just
whenever.
You're living by so many rules right now. Don't put any rules in place that you don't need to. I'm not a massive drinker. Yeah. I don't like being drunk. That's the irony of hosting a podcast called White Wine Question Time.
And I've had this thing lately where, or it was actually before lockdown, where I was like, if I'm going to go to the pub with my friends, I'm going to cap myself to four pints, because nothing good ever happens after the fourth or fifth or sixth drink. But trying to tell myself after four pints that I don't need another one, at that point, I'm four pints in, and he's gone, you're fine. This is, of course it's going to be better.
You're hilarious right now. Come on. Yeah. No, I know. Yeah.
How can this get worse?
I sort of have that rule about late nights, you know, like back in the day, pre-COVID, when you'd go away for a weekend with your friends and it gets to sort of like 2 a.m. I have a firm belief that nothing good after 2 a.m. happens much. And if it does, most people don't remember. And actually what you find is it just becomes a repetition of the conversations that played out earlier. So I've always had a kind of 2 o'clock, like, that's it, I've got to go. Also, when you're a single parent, there's no one to get up for you the next morning. So you have to discipline yourself. Discipline in single parenting is a hand in glove experience.
Well, that's it. I've got mates who haven't got kids. They have never experienced being hungover with a child. They just have no concept of that. So here's a question, right? We're not supposed to talk about work on this podcast, but when I was doing that little bit of research, I did have a question. You started off when you first edited Smash Hits 96, your first issue, arguably one of the most iconic moments in music.
Rubbish.
So can you just talk? So what was it, literally the first issue that you had to produce?
Disastrous.
Was when Take That split up.
Yeah, I got the job pre-Christmas, due to start in January, 21 years old. Only applied for the job for the experience of a job at, you know, job interview, because I'd never had to apply for a job before. Never thought I'd get it. And then literally built my sort of, you know, first X amount of issues out around the idea of Take That. And then they announced they were splitting up and there was Samaritan helplines. And so, and nobody sold like they did. They were kind of cover gold.
I remember it was massive news, right? People were crying in the streets. It was huge.
Yeah, it was massive. But that whole year at Smash Hits was quite remarkable, because I started with the demise of a great band for our audience. And I mean, I literally did so many memorial issues, and then they all started to do their solo careers. So continued to work with them across the year. By the end of the year, by the autumn, having sort of had this head scratching, like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Blur and Oasis, a huge thing. Dance music still dominant. Like, we're a pop magazine. Who do we put on the cover? Then the Spice Girls came along. So actually, I had this kind of sign. It was just lovely. These bookend moments of those great pop chapters in our history. And I really do think they were very important chapters for young girls. You know, fancying your favorite pop star is a really safe introduction to being, you know, a younger woman, you know, having a crush, understanding those emotions and letting them sort of play out in a really safe way, because you're just kind of gazing at a poster on the wall. And I think that's a really important experience. And for so many girls, that's why these Samaritan helplines were set up, because they felt a massive emotional connection to Take That. And then that experience by the end of the year, how girls were responding to the Spice Girls, was a different set of emotions, but equally as important when you're, you know, raging through puberty, about identifying. So not having to look like a perfect pop star, being able to go, there's these five girls that all look really different. They don't dress the same. They aren't the same. And that's celebrated. That was really important, I think, for young girls everywhere, and continues to be. People still chant and quote girl power. Even Adele falls to pieces at the thought of the Spice Girls.
From a industry point of view, because it's very rare that you get to see it from your side of things, from like an insider, did you see that a moment of before Spice Girls, after Spice Girls, and did that have an effect into the music industry for a good few years to come?
effect. It completely tore up the handbook and rewrote the rules. It was massive. It was massive. You know, girls, I had this argument, not argument at work, but we had this debate about, you know, can I put the girls on the cover? And my publishers quite rightly said, girls don't sell magazines to young girls. And I'm like, but nothing's right. selling right now. We've rinse take that. We've done all the solo careers. I made a deal with the girls when they stormed into the office one day asking for support. It was like, you get a number one, you'll get a cover. Until then, I'll put a piece in the magazine saying, we think you're great, but you've got to have a number one to get on the cover. The day they got a number one on the Sunday, we were organizing the shoot. It was in Japan, flew the photographer out with a pink color armor. It's still such an iconic shot of the Spice Girls exploding through this pink color armor backdrop. The cover line was Kapow. And yeah. they were here, and it was a revolution, and we backed it all the way. But they changed everything in a way that Madonna had come before them and changed everything for, you know, generations before that. They were really and remain really important.
So you can tell you're quite proud of being part of that.
No, I wasn't part of it. I mean, I literally was just not stupid enough to say no to them. I couldn't deny them like the rest of the world. They were undeniable. But it was an yeah. You know, I'm glad to call them friends, and I'm really, really thrilled that we kind of lived through some. I mean, I was on the peripheries. Those girls were just a movement in themselves, and to call them, you know, to call them friends now is wonderful. But we are all now just slightly creaky older women.
Right. I tell you what, let's get it back on track. Right. So you're at home with a 12-year-old boy. So let's just give us a snapshot of what's going on in your life at the moment, you know, with a 12-year-old boy. What are the kind of day-to-day conversations, struggles, things that you're observing that because, you know, the way I think I've noticed is each step of parenthood, there are certain things that change, right? And there are certain conversations and struggles that you go through.
How old are your kids? How old are yours?
I've got 3 and 1. So we're very much
you're
in
a different place to me. Like, you're having a really hard lockdown. I'm with a young man who's 12 years old, who's completely able to get himself dressed, make himself lunch if I'm out at work, dial in a takeaway if he needs it, if I'm in a studio and I can't get home to make him dinner. You know, he's got a mobile phone, he speaks with his friends. You know, it's a different space to where you are now. And I think arguably a much easier place. So it doesn't, the struggle has been trying to keep ourselves sane. You know, we've spent an extraordinary amount of time together and had a handful of like headbutting incidences, really. Mm. So I think I'm really proud of the way we've come through this, but more importantly, I'm really proud of the way he's handled it because he's, you know, he is my son. He's incredibly sociable because he's been raised that way. And suddenly we're locked down like this. He's never been a big kid for screens. He's always wanted to be out kicking a ball. Football is his life. Really sporty. So he's missing that. And screens just don't stimulate him in the same way that maybe they do for other kids. I can't wait for him to be able to play football again. You know, we had a brief taste of that. And suddenly from being the woman that goes every Sunday, like, oh, my God, get in the car. Come on. We've got to drive to some sort of corner of Kent to play Sunday league football. It became like the most exciting thing because it was sociable and people and contact. I'm proud of the way he's navigated this. The homeschooling is really tough on them. I mean, his school have been amazing and he's online pretty much all day, every day. But that in itself is exhausting. You know, it's a lot for these children. We have got to be so mindful of what kind of hangover they experience as we come out of this, be it education deficit, social kind of anxiety because they're so not used to being social anymore. And you remember like everything you were teaching your kids at the age I was teaching my son at the age yours are now, which is play together, be nice. Share none of that. Yeah. You can't do any of that now. It's everything's reverse. So confusing for little ones. You know, I think this is much harder on the children in so many ways than it is for us adults.
Yeah. Are you getting involved in the homeschooling? Are you helping to like do all that? Or are you because it's 12? That's quite. They're learning proper stuff now.
Listen, I can't do his maths. Are you kidding me? You know, and rubbish.
You must be good at his English.
I'm good at English. Yeah. I'm definitely a help with English. I'm quite helpful with history. I can help him structure, like, you know, he's writing essays for the first time now. So, yeah, definitely get involved on that front. But he doesn't ask for a lot of help. You know, it's different to when we were at school. He's emailing his teachers going, I'm struggling with this. Can you help? And they come back and set up a time to Zoom him. And, you know, he's managing all of that himself, which is amazing. And I know this because I then have a Zoom call with the teachers and say, how's he doing? And the feedback's amazing. So in so many ways, his independent learning has gone through the roof. But in so many other ways, I can't wait for him to get back into a classroom again. They need it. We all need it.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And like you say, there's just, well, just so much of that day to day, even just like you say, playing football, that just doing certain things daily, weekly, socializing, you, like you say, it's just not right. It's not normal for us, any of us, to be, you know, cooped up, especially at that age when they want to just run around and see the friends and stuff like that. How's like phone use and stuff like that? Do you, because that's something that I've always thought, as the kids get older, do we have to start thinking about, you know, is that something you have to go, come on, get off the phone? Or do you pretty good on that?
No, because at the moment, all they've got is screens. You know, he's an only child and he's locked down with me. So the only way he can communicate with his friends is via gaming, WhatsApp, house party, whatever it is that they're using. And to be honest, you know, during school term time, he's online from 8:15 till 4. He hasn't got a huge window to be hanging out with his mates anyway. So I've sort of, you know, our attitude is the moment we're allowed out, he's out. But until then, screens are fine.
Yeah.
As long as, and you know, I spot check his phone. I have a thing called Custodio, which is a really good app that enables you to manage your kids' mobile phone usage and search engines and web search and the amount of time that they're gaming. So you get this kind of dashboard where you can see what their search terms are, you know, all of that. So Custodio is really good. I got it free through O2, but I think you have, if you buy it, it's like 50 quid a year, but you can, and also what's brilliant is you can shut your kids down from wherever you are. So, what's quite funny is, like, if they're really annoying you or they've gone too far or they need to be punished, you just turn them off. Like, you just disconnect their Wi-Fi, or
That is power.
Oh, it's power. Like, you could do it from New Zealand. You know, I'm sure Tim Peake could have a go from space. What's brilliant is you go, well, okay, so you have X amount of screen time in the week and X amount at the weekends. This is pre-lockdown. I mean, I've never had to really kind of go in hard on this. He's always been he's quite chilled, my son. I'm waiting for teenage angst to kind of change everything. But yes, with this Custodio app, I mean, this isn't a spawn or an ad, by the way.
No, this is people, someone's going to be getting this and going, yes, I want this.
It's really good. So you just go on the dashboard, you open up the app and you go, okay, so the last three things they searched were, I don't know, baked potato. But, you know, what you don't want to see is something you don't want to see. So, and also it's you know, if they have a huff and a strop or whatever, you can just cut them off from where you could be at work and go, right, you know, I don't like the way you've just spoken to me. I haven't done this, by the way, but you can do this. I'm cutting you off.
Power.
I'm shutting you down.
That's like Black Mirror power, isn't it?
Big Brother, babe.
You know, you can... Oh, I mean, I could just imagine it now. If I was on the phone to my mom and I was out in town with my friends at 12 or 13 and I thought in front of my friends to be cool, I gave my mom some back chat on the phone because I'm around my friends, that would be it. Boom, done. See you later. Oh.
So when you get to that stage where your kids start using screens and phones, it's the Wild West. You know, you can put as many sort of protections around it in terms of parental locks and things. But they're smart. They're smarter than us. They can cut around all of that. So actually, the greatest way to monitor it is for them to know that at any time you can see what they've done or what they're doing.
So when I was a kid, it was a case of the parents would open up the PlayStation and just snap the game in half. When you were younger, if your parents wanted to do something like that and lock you down a bit, what was their go-to thing that they knew they could get you with?
Oh, see, I'm so old that we didn't have computers. I'm serious. I'm 48. So there was no computers at home. I had, because I wanted to be a journalist, I remember 14th birthday present was an electric typewriter.
I think they should bring back the landline. And the reason being is because, like you say, that was I think I was one of the last few generations before everybody got their own kind of mobile phone, right? But I remember being petrified if there was a girl I fancied and she gave you her landline number and you had to phone the family house phone. That was the scariest thing. And your son, probably for the better, will never experience the sweat and the fear moments before you press dial on a family house phone and you go, please don't let the dad answer. Please don't let the dad answer.
Yeah, you're right. The mobile generation will never quite understand your pain.
Right. Anyway, so look, Kate, this is all about parents giving their tips, right? So it can be from anything, from the small, the little hacks, like it sounds like you're already that app, boom, that's one, done. You've already sent some stuff over. Don't be afraid to rely on lies. What did you mean by that then?
I used to tell him, I do stuff like kind of bribery across the year. So you get to Easter. So Easter, do you want an Easter egg? You do. Well, you remember the Easter bunnies watching all the time. Yeah. Okay. Straight after Easter, it's his birthday. Do you want a birthday party? Right. Well, then you have to be a good boy. After the birthday party, it was like, do you want to go on holiday this summer? You do. I know. You love it when we go to Ibiza, don't you? You've got to be a good boy. Get back from Ibiza straight into September. Santa cams go on. So I used to tell him that come September, they became Santa cams. I'd been on TV where I'd been to Lapland and he'd seen me with Father Christmas, what he thought was Father Christmas. So, and I did a little piece to camera with Father Christmas on my phone afterwards that just said, hello, Ben, it's Father Christmas. Remember, I'm always watching, especially from September, and you must always eat your vegetables and do everything your mum says. And he was mesmerised. So he grew up thinking that those little flashing boxes in the corner of every room in our house from September were wired to Lapland. And that every time he did something naughty, a present came off his list and went to a child that really deserved it. Those are the sort of lies. I'm a single parent. Give me some, you know, give me some room here. You know, pull in a double shift.
So what you're saying is just tell whatever lies you can to get you to get you to the next step.
Totally. He's a completely well-balanced child. He now knows that they are not Santa cams. You know, he's aware of the world that he lives in. He's aware of the lies. He thinks it's quite funny. No psychological long-term damage, as far as I can tell. All is good, my friend. And, you know, other things were tough love. Like, I knew really early on, I was on my own with Ben from 20 months, that the only way I was going to get through this is if I had his utmost respect. So it's kind of, you've got to break them to remake them so that, you know, that sounds really harsh, but he was obsessed with Toy Story and Buzz Lightyear and he had this Buzz. And if he was naughty, I'd say to him, right, Buzz is going to sit in the recycling bin until Monday when the recycling men come. And you've got until Monday to get Buzz out of the recycling with your good behaviour. And he would try so hard to get Buzz back. I mean, it's harsh. I only did that once, but it worked. Never had to do it again.
This, do you know what? This, it feels like an entire subject. I feel we could do a whole episode on all the brilliant lies that you've told a child. And there was no guilt from your point of view, going, oh, I'm kind of lying here. It's all fair. It's
full-time all fair. Working single mother with no childcare. No guilt at all, my friend.
There we go. That's a tip we can all take right now. Lie, lie, lie.
Good lies.
To get the job done. Good
lies. Positive lies. Right. What were those lies doing? They were making him be obedient, respectful, and eat vegetables and fruit. Win-win. Everyone's a winner.
Yeah. Perfect. Love it. Love it. Quick one, before we get your next tip, what's your, if there's one that springs to mind, over the years, your most embarrassing parent moment or funny parenting story?
100% when he pulled my pyjama bottoms down in front of the postman and I had no knickers on. Total shame. And he's still my postman now.
Sorry, what?
Yeah.
In front of the postman, he pulled your...
While I was signing for a parcel. I had pyjama bottoms on and a T-shirt. And, you know, and they're like, Mom, Mom. And he was yanking away at me. Tiny at the time. Didn't know what he was doing. Awful. Awful. Poor Aussie, my postman.
All I can imagine is that the package was hopefully big enough. You just
it wasn't.
Put it down.
And I just went, don't look. And he went, I'm not looking. And it was horrific. Horrific.
Oh, man.
And he's still my postman and I love him. But we just pretend that day never happened.
Wow. Good. Okay, right. So jumping back in, we've had one tip. We had a great tip.
I think, you know, so certainly when you've had your first child, and obviously I never got past one, but that you get to moments where you think, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I can't, like that. I mean, my son didn't sleep for 3 years. I just didn't get any sleep. And it was like a form of sort of persecution and torture at times. And then they sleep. So you find yourself in these moments where you go, I can't do this bit, or the bit where, you know, when they just start walking and the corners of everything have to be sort of, you know, sponged. And you just think, oh my God, how do we live like this? And you're taking everything, but everything just lives on upper shelves in your house. There's nothing in reach. And you just think, you look around your house and you go, it looks like bloody Toys R Us in here. Where's the stylish furniture gone? Where's my living environment? All of it changes. Everything changes. Everything changes. The tantrums. You think, oh my God, how do we live like this with the tantrums? Everything passes. And the next stage is a different set of challenges. And they might not be any easier. They might be not be any harder. They're just different. But just remember, everything is a phase. Just have a little bit of faith in the fact that you'll get through it. Because sometimes you feel like it is parent versus child and you're not quite sure who's winning.
So the sleep thing, out of all the phases, that sounds, everything you've just listed, sounds like the sleep one was probably
awful.
Was that the most painful one?
It was really tough. He just never slept. Never slept through the night. And then I'd get him down to sleep and I'd have to crawl out of his bedroom like a commando across the floor. And then you get out and you think, I'm out. And then you hear, Mom! You think, oh,
It's that feeling. And you know, only like a new parent knows, they can literally in their mind close their eyes and tell you where every creaky floorboard in the entire house is.
But then you go back in and you'd be like at the end of your tether and you look at them. And you just love them so much and they smile or they touch your face or they hug you and you just think. And now I look back and I think, I'd give anything for one of those nights. I miss that so much. So don't wish those sleepless nights away because they don't last for long. 3 years is long, mind you. That's quite
Wish some of them away. Some of them away. So with that, did you try anything? Because people might be going through the same kind of thing. Were there any things that you tried or got any advice or anything?
Yeah, but he was, you know, he had reflux. So most advice is, you know, let them cry, take away their audience. I couldn't do that. I had a video monitor and I could see if he was going to get to the point where he was going to throw up. He had to sleep at an angle. He was poorly for the first year of his life. He is medicated with every feed. And that sets a pattern, which you then have to break. You just go, oh my God, I'm trying everything. I read all the books. And actually, that takes me to my other piece of advice, which is ask for people's opinions. Read as much as you like, but ultimately only you know what's right for you as a parent. And it can sometimes feel, because you're at such a low ebb and you're sleep deprived, you're physically and hormonally all over the place as a woman after giving birth. And then there's this onslaught of people feeling that, I mean, it's really well intended. They feel like they're giving you sage wisdom and advice, but actually sometimes it can just be feel like you're being told that everything you're doing is wrong or you're not right enough. And actually, what's right for one parent and their child might not necessarily be right for you. So do it your way.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's advice we've not had. And I think as parents, we think we are this fountain of information now. And we go, great, let me tell you all of this stuff. How have you chosen how to give your advice to people?
You know, just try to keep it light, because it's the last thing you need is to be preached at. Everyone's a bloody expert.
Mm. Yeah.
It feels like that. And sometimes you're so tired and you're so hormonally disrupted that you don't even know who you are. And I know how it made me feel at times. It was really well intended, but it wasn't always welcome. You know, I'd have so many people go, let him cry. Let him cry. I'm like, you don't understand. He's got severe reflux. If he cries, he could vomit. If he vomits, he may choke on his own vomit. He could die. I can't let him cry it out. Oh, yes, she can. No. And then you're really tired and quite ratty. No, I actually really can't. And I really can't. But thanks for this really quite distressing, demoralizing conversation. So that kind of made me this way. I really wouldn't want to do that to anybody else. And nobody meant to do that. You know, it was, like I said, very well intended.
I think we don't think sometimes how we give advice or what we're actually saying sometimes. Do you know what I mean? And I think that actually, as a parent, we don't filter ourselves sometimes. And I think that's maybe something to think about.
It is sometimes, because I think we're also passionate about it because we love our children. Mm. And it's an experience that literally blows every mind of every parent, mum or dad. I'm sure it takes such a hold on your life, and it changes your life so irrevocably that you want to talk about it and you want to share your experiences. And we do become passionate. We don't, you know, I don't think anybody means to be sort of finger wagging preachy, but sometimes it can feel like that. In lockdown, I migrated all of my photos onto one hard drive. And then Ben and I would sit down in lockdown for a long time, and I'd go pick a month, pick a year, and we'd go back to those times and all the videos that I'd filmed of him and the pictures. And it was so wonderfully nostalgic to go back and revisit all of that with him. And you just realise it is the blink of an eye. I still feel like a new mum, and I'm not. You know, I'm a 48-year-old woman with a 12-year-old son. It goes so quickly. Just enjoy it. Even the bits that feel shit, enjoy the shit bits, because you'll miss those too, like the sleepless nights. What I wouldn't give now to feel his little chunky wrists and change his nappy and hold him on my shoulder and hug, snuggle into, you know, I miss that. So enjoy every moment. Drink it in. Because it's gone. It's gone in a heartbeat.
That is a good bit of positivity, which I think when you're in the eye of the storm, so to speak, in the trenches,
yeah,
you can't hear that stuff enough.
Oh, you really can't. And I, you know, and do you know who told me that was Sharon Osbourne? She said, you know, she said, if I had any, because we used to spend hours in makeup together. She said, if I could do anything, if I could rewind the clock, I'd just have my kids as babies again. And I really get it now. I so get it. Just if I could just time hop around his childhood again, if I could hold his hand and walk him to school, just that.
Yeah.
If I could walk into a playground and have him run at me, literally throwing his bag down so he had both arms free to hug me, that, all of that, you've got that to come, Ben. You're so lucky. You're so lucky that you've got all of those magical moments. But also, you've got all of the moments of, you know, having to do the stuff that's really frustrating and difficult and boring and repetitive. So just never forget the magic. No pun intended.
Hey, boom. She's a true professional, ladies and gentlemen. No, but that, do you know what? That's been really, really positive. We've got a few finishing questions. What's the best thing that you've ever bought as a parent?
Probably the baby monitor. Oh, Jumperoo. That was the only way I ever had a shower. Jumperoo.
Is that the thing on the door?
No. It's the big circular thing. The rainforest one he had with loads of bells and whistle on it. But I used to literally jump in the shower and he'd be in the Jumperoo and he would jump, jump, jump for hours. And I could just literally wash and condition my hair. That just felt heavenly. I could go to the loo. And it was on wheels. So I used to just wheel him around in this Jumperoo. The Jumperoo was great.
Anything recently? Like I say, you're dealing with a small adult now, but is there anything that you guys have spent money on recently or things like that?
Yeah, when we were allowed to go out and eat in restaurants, just our household, so it's just me and him, we've had some magical dinners, great conversations that I'll always remember and treasure. And a really great parka for standing on sidelines of endless football matches that I still don't understand the rules for, but I love his passion for it.
So what is, if I was to see you at the sidelines of a football match, what kind of mum are you? Are you the screamy, shouty one? Are you?
Yes. All of them are, though. There's very few quiet ones.
Right. See, obviously we're not there yet, but you hear people, I think that's a whole new world in itself, isn't it? The sideline parenting.
Oh, like, God, yeah. And the Sunday morning sort of hangover gang of like, if you have had to, you know, had a night out before, remember that. And you're sort of struggling there with a hangover. There's this great sense of community where it's like, would you like me to go and get you a bacon sandwich? I'd love that. Thanks so much. That's all right. You know, there's great solidarity in those moments.
One final question. It's the question we always ask right at the end. If you could go back in time in a time machine to the day before you became a parent, what advice would you give yourself?
Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Don't worry. Don't worry. Everything's going to be all right. Even the hard bits, you know, broke my heart becoming a single parent. It's okay. You know what? It's worked out okay. We're good. Me and him, we're good. He's a really happy, well-rounded, solidly, emotionally sorted little boy at the moment. I hope that always remains the case. But just enjoy it. Enjoy every moment. And have faith in yourself as a parent. Like, believe in you, because they believe in you. So you've got to believe in you too. It's like, you know, you can't expect anyone to love you unless you love yourself. Well, the same applies to parenting. It's like, if they believe in you, you have to believe in you too, because you're all they've got.
Brilliant. Kate, thank you so much. That has been brilliant.
So there we go, another episode of Ben Behaving Dadly. Hopefully you enjoyed it. And you do us a favour, could you hit the subscribe button? That would be amazing. And also possibly leave us a review, because that really, really makes a difference. And also, I'm getting very professional now. I've got myself an email address for this and all sorts. It's info@benbehavingdadly.com.